Hi, this is Jeannie Drisco bringing you an episode of The Art and Soul of Healing. Today, on the wings of Alliance for Natural Health, we will be visiting Diana Noland in California. Today, Diana will be discussing the nutrition care process and the use of the radial to guide us when we care for patients. I'd like to welcome Diana Noland.
Welcome, Diana, and thank you for spending time with us on The Art and Soul of Healing. Hi.
Hi. So glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, you've been on the leading edge of integrative and functional medicine nutrition therapy and practicing this approach for many, many years. So I know you've told me some of the story before, but what prompted your shift from conventional dietetics? I think people like to hear this story.
Well, I started out as a clinical dietitian in a hospital. And as I began to practice, I could see there were much deeper aspects that were affecting people's nutritional status. And it wasn't just looking at a diet history and their diagnosis that would lead to a good therapy. So I started reading. I also, during my master's degree training at Loma Linda University, they were very much based on a vegetarian diet. Not that I'm promoting vegetarianism necessarily, but they were deep into what I would call integrative and functional medicine thinking. It wasn't called that at the time. But they kind of took me under their wing and taught me a lot about that, about the power of food and the power of lifestyle and the power of the environment to affect your health. And so I started to enlarge my thinking on what affects someone's health. And I think that was the beginning. And then many contacts throughout my career of probably because I was attracted to people that were more integrative or functional thinking. And then about, 35 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles and I started to follow the lecturing of Jeffrey Bland, who has become what they call the father of functional medicine. But I used to go to his lectures as he would come to Los Angeles. And I would be the only nutritionist in the group, and there would maybe be 30 people, doctors, chiropractors, whatever. And it took me a couple of years to even understand what he was talking about. And what he was talking about was the biochemistry of the body and how it is dependent on nutrition and affected on by nutrition and affected by how you live your life, how you sleep, and the environment. We've had a growing exposure to toxins that haven't really been identified as, you know, necessarily affecting your health in the clinical world. So that's how I grew into what I'm doing today.
Well, you have been able to see the field of integrative and functional medicine nutrition therapy grow, and you've helped shape it along the way. What of all your accomplishments are you most proud of? I know there's so many.
Well, I guess I'm proud of the individual dietitians that have gotten a glimpse of how this could expand their clinical skills. And I would lecture at universities along the years, and there would be afterwards questions, and there would be lined up students in dietetics really hungry to know this. So I think affecting the individual students has been a great thing. And then I had the opportunity to work for the Institute for Functional Medicine and working on bringing nutrition to a greater importance in their work. And it's still there today. They have a great course in functional nutrition. And it's affected all the faculty and the way they teach. And then I had the opportunity to work with you.
Oh, well, that's
amazing, at the University of Kansas Medical Center. And you've been a great mentor to me because you were the first time I experienced a team, a professional team, thinking together the same way. And you honored everybody on the team. And that was quite an unusual experience for me.
Oh, well, thank you.
In a hospital setting.
Yeah.
So that was where I think it culminated for me. And then actually this book you're talking about was born out of that experience where we started to develop a curriculum in a dietetic internship. The first time there had been an integrative track in a dietetic internship. And out of that, we realized we needed some classes that were greater than the basic nutrition in their curriculum. And so we developed two classes on inflammation and just basic, how do you bring in integrative thinking into medical nutrition therapy? And we realized there was no textbook out there. And that's how this book was born.
Well, it's really been necessary. You've also helped the ADN solidify the integrative and functional medicine nutrition track. I think it's called DIFM, Dietitians in Integrative and Functional Medicine. What does it look like today? I know it's grown tremendously.
Yes, we are one of the largest groups. They have what smaller parts of the academy where they're called dietetic practice groups. And of all those groups, I think there's probably 20 or I don't know exactly, but we are one of the largest groups and growing fast. So there's great interest in this aspect of medical nutrition therapy.
Yeah, I think there must be.
And we were able to develop a networking relationship with the University of Kansas Medical Center dietetics program, which is not so easy to do. So, and right now it's growing, but also the whole resource of that group that anybody can access has grown tremendously. And if you go on to their website, it's integrativerd.org. It's a great resource, even if you're not a member, but it's very inexpensive to be a member. And you have so many tools going in there.
Well, that's wonderful that you've helped develop that. So your chapter in the Integrative and Functional Medicine Nutrition Therapy textbook called The Radial synthesizes your experience over the past 35 plus years. How did Elizabeth Redmond, Kathy Swift, and you come up with this idea of the radial?
We were challenged with being on the authorship of developing the standards of practice for the dietetics and integrative and functional medicine. So this would be a journal article in the Academy's journal by Elsevier. And when we were challenged with this, we realized it's a big picture. There are a lot of aspects. It's multidimensional. When you are considering investigating someone's health status, and especially regarding medical nutrition therapy, the Academy calls it the nutrition care process. And so, you know, that is in the center of the radial. First you assess someone, then you diagnose a nutritional diagnosis, like they're deficient in vitamin D or et cetera. And then you develop an intervention, and then you have to monitor it, because the beginning intervention is the best guess. And you have to monitor to see how that individual is responding to the intervention. And then you evaluate and make adjustments as needed. So that is the basic nutrition care process. But we realize the integrative and functional a dietitian or nutritionist or practitioner needs to have so many other multidimensional factors considered to be able to come up with the best intervention. And so we realized, you know, let's develop a graphic that would pull all this together. And that's how the radio was born.
So could you describe it? It's very hard to talk about a graphic. Can you describe it a little bit?
Yes. I mean, with the nutrition care process being the center, and it's all about personalized nutrition, which is an up-and-coming topic, even NIH.
Yes. I was shocked to see that article that came out this past week.
And so that article really described the growing interest in personalized. And I think it can have a lot of different meanings. One of them is that you're talking about genetics, because that's very personal. But we know there's a lot of other aspects to the personalized. And this graphic really engages people in understanding. What we did is we looked at how do you practice medical nutrition therapy in a personalized way. And we realized the nutrition care process is actually something that can be applied in every setting. It can be applied, and you'll see on the outside of that center circle, it can be a community effort, like public health. It can be a body, mind, and spirit, somebody that gets into those aspects of health. And it can be just the physical body, like a one-on-one situation you would find in a hospital or in a private practice clinician. So anyway, it applies everywhere. And what we did is we looked at five spheres of influence on nutritional health. And the first one was food, lifestyle, and environment. Now, in regular dietetics, usually you're just looking at food. You're looking at what someone is eating, how they're digesting, and what kind of a diagnosis they have. And that's pretty much limited to regular dietetics. And many dietitians, of course, have expanded beyond that as they become more skilled. But we know that lifestyle, for instance, right now, sleep is a lifestyle factor that may be as important as what you eat. All of the ways it affects your circadian rhythm and it affects how you use your nutrition. So that would be a lifestyle. How you move is a lifestyle factor. Physical activity is huge on affecting your nutritional status, moving your lymphatic fluids, moving, and also how muscles are, the health of your muscles. All kinds of factors are affected by how you move. And then the other was environmental. That has been not emphasized enough on the effect the environment, and especially toxins, have on the ability of your body to metabolize and use nutrition. And many times the toxins' presence, your exposure, will increase nutritional requirements of nutrients. And so there's all kinds of influence there. Another sphere that we identified in practice, we have nutrition, physical signs, and symptoms. When you are evaluating and investigating a person on a personalized level, you need to get what their symptoms are. What are some of the signs, including nutrition, physical exam? Look at their skin. Look at their face, the effect of their face. All of these things are telling you something about what's going on inside in their nutrition metabolism. So that was a very important thing. There are many tools. You need a toolbox if you're going to be a medical nutrition therapist. And in part of that toolbox is questionnaires. It could be tools of measurement of anthropometrics. Anthropometrics is a universal skill that you even get going in a hospital or anywhere. What's your height? What's your weight? But there are additional factors in anthropometrics that usually the integrative and functional nutritionist will use, like a bioelectric impedance analysis or a hand grip. Knowing strength is becoming really important. because losing strength as you age is a big red flag of your nutritional status. And so all of these other tools are mentioned in the chapter that are very helpful. If you aren't already using those tools, it's good to start thinking about adding some of them. And then we have a whole sphere about biomarkers. Biomarkers, I really feel that the MNT focused practitioner will need to become intimately familiar with metabolic and biochemical networks and pathways. Mm-hmm. And we have to learn the biomarkers that are indicating what's going on in the metabolism. And you start out with just regular conventional laboratory markers. And you can tell when you're trained to look at what is the nutritional influence on those, it is a tremendous help. Sometimes you don't even need to go to the other way we can do biomarkers, which are specialty labs. And many times they're not covered by insurance and they are a little bit more work to get. But many times you can just use conventional labs. A regular physician in conventional medicine is going to use those labs for diagnostic skill. But we use them for more finding the trends that the metabolism is going the direction. Even if it's still within a normal reference. Then another sphere is, of course, I've already mentioned the metabolic pathways and networks. These you need to become intimately involved in understanding how nutrients and lifestyle and environment affect those pathways and how to assess where that patient is at. Like in the citric acid cycle or in the eicosanoid cascade of fatty acids. These are very important pieces of information that will help you identify the nutritional diagnosis of the patient. And then systems. This whole radio is how we tie all the systems together in what is called systems biology. We know that as we were trained in any discipline of medicine, we were trained in truncated systems, kind of being isolated.
It's so true. Yeah.
So a cardiologist may not be aware of what an endocrinologist is doing. An endocrinologist may not be aware of what a hematologist is doing. And it can go on and on where every discipline of medicine needs to be connected because they're all affecting each other.
That's so true. So
the idea of systems biology is strong through every aspect of this radio. Now, another thing we did is, okay, these spheres are actually separated. How do we tie them together? So we tie them together with someone's genetics. And the field of nutrigenomics is growing in understanding how nutrients affect the expression of genes in every one of these spheres. We have some things that are aspects of life that interfere with metabolism. And so we put those on the outline with a little bit of a electrical aggravation. And the first one, and everybody would agree, is stress. Stress affects your metabolism in so many ways. And so we describe some of the factors, how you assess someone's stress. And another one was the toxins that I've mentioned. It's a major aggravant to metabolism if it's exposed. And we know that certain jobs have high exposure. Like I was reading where in Greece, hairstylists are considered in a high toxic area category. And so they have a retirement less than the average person.
Oh, I did not know that.
All the toxins they're exposed to throughout their career. So these toxins can have a great impact, especially depending on how you are exposed, how much you're exposed to. Then pathogens. And right now in the COVID era,
Yes.
You know that pathogens have a huge effect on your metabolism. And right now, there's emerging quite a bit of research identifying some of the nutrients that are involved in higher risk of COVID infection. And like zinc, like vitamin D, these are very important, and the people that are going to be more at risk are deficient in these. So pathogens can run a real havoc on your metabolism, and we discuss that. And the more, maybe most common one is allergens and food intolerances that are so important with knowing how do you recommend foods to people by understanding what might bother them, and everybody's different. I tell patients, one of the only things you can't be allergic to is distilled water, because everything else is game. That we know that in the allergy world in medicine, they've identified 10 most common factors. And we know our wonderful mentor, Dr. Marikovich out of Stanford, he identified 10 being the most important, because 90% of allergic or intolerant sensitivity reactions are from those 10. So that's a good place to start. But we know there can be any others that a person is allergic to or having an inflammatory response. And so we need to look at that. Many times, if it's a true allergy, people will already know that because they have felt the reaction. And so you need to have that in your questionnaire. What known foods are you sensitive to or allergic to? And we need to develop the whole food recommendation, considering those sensitivities. And sometimes we don't know what they are. And there can be specialty testing where we can identify some of those reactions and then adjust their diet recommendations to be personalized for them so that they decrease their inflammation and improve the response of their metabolism.
You know, I don't think dietitians or even practitioners of all stripes realize how powerful this radial is and how it can really inform your practice. How do you approach using the radial in your practice?
Well, I have that poster up in my office, I can refer to it. But I will often show them this at the beginning and tell them this is what we're looking for. Because I think the biggest thing when you're working with an individual is that they understand that you are individualizing what they need, because the whole goal is that they increase their wellness status. And they want to feel well, and often they'll come to you to an integrative and functional practice having seen many other practitioners in the conventional world.
Without an integrative world.
Yes, yeah, and without answers. And we can, like I had a patient recently that was a young boy, teenager, that had gone to Children's Hospital, diagnosed with Crohn's, and was on a bunch of medication, and still having symptoms. And so I didn't have any other tests, but I recommended some tests, so we still didn't have those results. And I said, well, let's start out with the two top ones that allergists in the conventional world have identified as the two top allergens in the food, wheat and dairy. I said, let's just start out with that for a couple months while we're waiting to get these other tests. Do you know within 4 days, these symptoms normalized?
Wow.
Now, that was pretty lucky.
Yeah. Well,
it should have been much more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But, and he is now at 6 weeks weaning, and the doctor's allowing to wean down on his medication, and hopefully he won't need it.
Boy, that would be a powerful tool for this young man to be able to see he can control his own health.
Yes. And he was very compliant too. So it can be as simple as that, or it can be very complicated.
Well, you describe the holistic approach to well-being as a dynamic interplay of the mind, body, and spirit. How are patients out of balance in these areas, and what do you recommend to begin stitching them back together?
I guess one of the things would be to make sure the patient understands that you are a partner with them. Because I have had the experience of being sent a referral patient from a regular clinic, conventional, and them thinking that we're going to do everything for them. And I think in integrative and functional practices, they need to understand that it is definitely a partnership and that it's going to require that they are compliant to figure out what's going on. I think them accepting responsibility to be working with you is a huge factor. In fact, it can be the factor that is success, produces success or not of an outcome. So that, and then tying it all together, I think one of the things I start out with the patient is, I have a diagnosis. I'm getting your history, your medical history, your family history. I have a few tests to go on, but we're going to have a clean slate here, and we're going to start putting all this together and find out what are the factors that are interfering with your health. Once we identify those, they may not identify all of them, but we're going to start out with what we can find out. And then we're going to start changing that. We have to monitor how you do. So you need to be good at giving me feedback, how you're tolerating things, how you're feeling. And from there, we start the partnership of heading toward your having a condition of wellness that you're satisfied with. And I would make a point that like some of the HMOs that I have patients from, and I don't get coverage from the insurance from them, but they come and the last two, monitoring and evaluation, are kind of left out in their approach. They get a diagnosis. They look at the person's diet history and their choices, whether they're vegetarian or meat eaters or vegan, or they're on an allergy diet, and they develop a diet from that, and they don't ever monitor it.
And that's just inconceivable, isn't it? But I know that's pretty typical too, not just in dietetics, but in conventional medicine. People are put on medication and then they're just left on it.
Right, right.
It's really...
So the Academy really brought in very important points there in the monitoring and evaluation.
Yeah, that is so important. And then you use genomics, metabolomics, or just generally omics in your personalized nutrition care process. How do you do that? What does that look like for patients?
Well, I think historically we've always done it to a degree by knowing somebody's family history. So that was before we had the complete genomics, genetic testing of the body, the human body. We used family history. And if everyone in your ancestors had neurological diseases, we knew that that was a bigger risk for you. And so we would consider that in looking at the history and the assessment. But once the genetics were available, and they're growing in importance, this is a new field, but we do have enough information that we can look at what are some of the risks you have with certain, what we call SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. And we can know the importance of certain nutrients based on that. For instance, if somebody, there is a gene that is quite researched right now, there's actually several of them, about 12 of them, of vitamin D receptor. It's a nuclear receptor on the nucleus of every cell. And that gene is now being researched, especially in the cancer field, we know that vitamin D is important for all chronic diseases. But in cancer, breast cancer was the first one I saw in the research where they were looking at someone's vitamin D receptor gene. And if they also had the perfect storm of a low vitamin D blood level, that they were much more at risk of not surviving or not doing as well with some of the treatments. And in clinical practice, I do get a lot of oncology patients, and I would have to say anybody that comes in with ovarian cancer, because that has been an area of research with the vitamin D receptor, that if they come in with ovarian cancer diagnoses, I will encourage strongly that they get a vitamin D receptor gene test. Now, some of them come in with several gene tests, but there is also a lab that will do just the vitamin D receptor. And if they have that receptor as heterozygous or homozygous, and they have a vitamin D blood level of vitamin D 25 hydroxy of 7 or 5, that is a big factor in their disease. And so we start the intervention of improving their vitamin D status. And it has been quite amazing to see the results.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure the patients really embrace this concept of looking deeply into their genetics. Well, you also use the phrase food as information. Tell us what that means to you.
Well, from what I understand is that as they started to look at all of the gene mapping of the human body, there were quite a few genes that were called junk DNA. And since then, we found that they weren't junk. And there are a lot of genes that do not change. They're kind of set in stone, but they can express themselves differently. Some geneticists I have heard lecture have even made the statement that each gene can have 40,000 different expressions and not change the gene. And so really nutrition and genomics is about epigenetics. Epigenetics is where the gene doesn't change, but the way it receives messages from food or environmental toxins can change the way it expresses. I mean, this was astounding when I first started to hear about what epigenetics was. And since then, I have started to be able to have access on right now, maybe 20 patients so far at an epigenetics lab in Europe, and seeing how it's affecting the expression of a gene. So I first heard about this from going to a toxicology conference, and Rutgers University was doing some studies on melatonin receptors. And the study was looking at cadmium toxic exposure. And cadmium has been known to attach to the melatonin receptor so that melatonin cannot message that receptor and help you sleep. So that was like, whoa, when I heard that. And I happened to have a young patient that works in the movie industry who was a painter. And he was exposed to a lot of paint, including yellow, which is cadmium yellow. Mm-hmm. And he slept like 2 hours every night.
Ugh.
It was horrible, the insomnia. And so we did some toxic tests. He came up with high levels of red blood cell cadmium. And I had just been to that toxicology conference. But what they had found in this research at Rutgers was you can inactivate the negative influence of cadmium on that melatonin receptor by adding the nutrient selenium.
Okay.
And selenium would knock the cadmium off the melatonin receptor, and it would help the melatonin receptor start to function again correctly. So, you know, I started to look at, this is how you kind of follow the specialty testing, where we did the RBC nutrient elements test, and we found out he was really low in selenium.
Okay.
Among other nutrients,
yes,
magnesium, et cetera. But I started to make sure he was getting selenium, and he started to improve his sleep. Now, that's one case, but we know now that especially methylation nutrients, we know there's a lot of research, maybe the most research in nutrigenomics is in the methylation group, especially with folate. And I know you've worked with that too. The genes regarding the function of folate in the metabolism are well known. Even Medicare covers the testing for them. So, you know, once we start to understand the genomics of someone, we can start to customize their nutrient recommendations to help enhance their expression of genes.
And that's the way the field is going. You talk about the science of nutrition and the art of dietary behavior change. Tell us how you personally value your patients' stories to bring about that change. I think that's one thing that's overlooked, is the patient's story.
Yes, and I would have to say this graphic of the radio is about the patient's story. You're looking at all of these facets of influences on health, and you want to reach into that story and hear what the patient's history is, even back to in utero. And it can build up and come to the point of where their health status is. And then you're going to look into every one of these spheres. As they're giving you the story, you want to have the tools that help you bring out that story so that it can be assessed in a way that's very organized and it doesn't take forever. And for instance, there's a medical symptoms questionnaire that has been used by so many functional practitioners that looks at all the systems, and in 5 minutes, you can see where they have risk factors. So we need tools like that to be able to hear the patient's story very quickly. I mean, you can't spend all day listening to the patient and have a business. So we're looking for tools that are going to be very accurate and very informative into hearing the patient's story. And I think one of the things about the patient's story is the mind, body, spirit influence, because that's really how we think, and the feelings we have influence the physical body's expression. And that's part of the story that's so important. And it probably relates to the stress aggravant there. I have a lot of stories about being surprised at hearing the patient's story and the feelings. And then, like, one that this patient let me use it for a case, and she had a lot of stress markers that were coming up, and she had a lot of skin issues, eczema, and, you know, on and on. And it was a little bit complex. One of the things we know is scars can influence how energy travels through the body. Acupuncturists know this the best. And so I asked, after exploring so many things on the patient, I asked if she had any scars. And she had a turtleneck, a top on. And she said, yes, I have a scar. And she pulled her turtleneck down, and there was a huge scar with, you know, a laceration. And she had been with her mom in Guatemala as her mom, who was a mayor of the city, was being killed. And the knife also, they tried to hurt her. And she'd had that experience. And so, you know, you don't ever really know unless you keep digging down what some of the experiences that people have been that have added a stress that is hard to forget. There are therapies that, and that's one of the things as being a nutritionist, part of the professional team, you know how to take issues that you find and symptoms you find and refer to the specialist that can help that person walk through answers. I know that's the one thing that was so strong in working with you and your team, is that there was a team that had all the answers. If you could work in referring, you identify something that you know is not your skill, and you're able to refer to the person in the team that is going to help that the individual.
That's what we absolutely need now, is this team approach. And I just, in conventional medicine, they want to approach it, but I just think our conventional model is not allowing for this broad look and help for patients. Well, yes. I'm going to jump to symptoms biology. You talk about how we all are interconnected systems and how these interconnected systems are working together. What do you mean by that? Maybe if you could simplify that a little bit for people.
Well, I think the medical symptoms questionnaire is a great organization of the systems, because you do have to look at the symptoms on their own basis, but then you have to know how they connect. For instance, I'm going to just pick two and show how they connect. One is joint health. Okay, so how are the joints feeling? And you're asking the person, do they have any joint symptoms of pain, discomfort? And, you know, we look at that. And then we ask for digestive health. Do they have any indigestion, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, that type of thing? And so I'm going to connect those two, because joint health might be, most people would think of a hip or a knee or, you know, those kind of joints, or a back. But there are two joints that can affect digestion in a way maybe not appreciated. And those two joints are the cervical one and cervical two. And those surround the brainstem. And they also house the vagal nerve coming from the brain. It's the longest cervical nerve. And it passes through that those cervical vertebrae, and they happen to control the involuntary, the autonomic nervous system of the lungs and the whole digestive tract. So it may not be an issue, but I do ask, have they ever had a neck or head injury? Because that can move those vertebrae and compress or damage the nerves coming through. And if they have never, you know, we go on to the next symptom that might be bothering them. And so say a patient has inflammatory bowel disease, which can have a lot of different symptoms, but where their whole digestion, especially the lower digestion, and they may be having diarrhea all the time, they may be having constipation all the time, but whatever their symptoms, I ask the question, have they ever had a head or neck injury? And if they have, we want to bring that system into focus and make sure that that gets assessed by a practitioner that can do that, and then find out if it needs correction. Because we may be adding probiotics or get rid of pathogens that are in the gut, or we may be doing things to try to deal with that. But if we don't fix the vagal nerve, we may be limited in what we can do to correct that inflammatory bowel disease.
So who are you partnering with?
I have had in my network around the LA area, I have osteopaths that I have worked with. They do the classic osteopathic manipulation. It can be incredible if somebody is well trained in it. Also, there are some chiropractors that do what's called NUCA, which is dealing with the cervical alignment, and they can be very helpful. I think the regular chiropractors, I don't feel that usually they won't touch the neck because it's so sensitive. There's just a little millimeter movement can cause an effect. But that would be one way where two systems are having a huge effect on each other. And it could be also that maybe they have lung problems, maybe an asthma patient that had a vagal nerve problem. Also, there are exercises we can give somebody with vagal nerve problem. And I do a test in my nutrition assessment of having somebody take a tongue depressor and look at their gag reflex. That is a sign of vagal nerve imbalance. And if they can't gag, I mean, if I push down on my tongue, it doesn't take very far back to get a gag reflex. But if you have somebody pushing back all the way back to the throat and no gag reflex, mm-hmm. that is something of a problem with the vagal nerve function.
Interesting.
So all kinds of more detailed nutrition physical exam tools that you can use. Another would be their dental health, looking at their dental health. And we know that inflammation is common to every chronic disease, and it's chronic inflammation. We know regular inflammation is very protective to the body and able to respond to injury or an infection. But when it becomes chronic, we know it's a big problem common to chronic diseases. And so we know that just looking at somebody's mouth and their periodontal gum health can affect inflammation throughout the body. So those systems would be connected. We could look at any one of these and we could find connections. All the systems are affecting each other. And nutrition, I always feel like nutrients are the parts of the engine that makes your metabolism work. And if you have a deficit in any one or a few nutrients, your metabolism can't work. And if you think about medication or drugs, you can take a drug and they can be very, very strong-handed. They go in and they can, you know, blast metabolism and you can get an effect. Uh-huh. But it doesn't mean you're correcting the metabolism deficits.
Absolutely.
And sometimes even a drug doesn't work, because if you're so deficient in certain nutrients, that drug has to have those nutrients for it to work. So the nutrients are really key players in whether your body can respond to getting well.
Well, I'm going to change gears a little bit here. Tell me what you and Steve have been doing for fun during this shutdown, this past 6 months.
Well, one thing, we finally had time to do a kitchen remodel.
Oh,
I get so busy and, you know, it tears your whole life up.
Yes, it does.
So I hadn't focused on it. But so we've had that. But the other thing is we've had a great time with our grandkids.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They happen to live close. So that's been so fun.
Yeah.
And we, within our family, we're not wearing masks because we uh-huh. have very good exposure. Just the two sons going to work have, they have exposure, but they're very careful with their masks and their hand sanitation. So we've had a fun family time.
Oh, that's great.
More of a normal situation for the kids. Of course, the kids haven't been going to school, so doing school at home, and I was able to help a little bit with that.
Oh, I bet you're a great teacher for them too. I can just hear you. Well, thank you, Diana, for sharing your vision and experience with us on the art and soul of healing. You are one of my inspirations, and people love to listen to you. So I appreciate you helping me out and coming back on.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. We're so excited about this radio. We were able to have it as part of the Standards of Practice publication that's in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And it's also been in some other textbooks. We have it in this textbook. And we've had universities ask if they can use it. Pharmaceutical departments.
It really does cross a lot of borders for sure. Well, where can people find you?
Well, my website, it's just still has a little bit of work to do, but nolandnutrition.com. Right now, I'm just doing telemedicine, and I will do home visits, you know, with masks and everything. Mm-hmm. For oncology patients or very complex patients that have not found answers.
Yes.
Because I do some clinical testing, you know, as the vagal nerve, but also I use the bioelectric impedance analysis.
Yes, so important for them. And
I want to get their blood pressure, their, I want to do the nutrition physical exam, and that is very difficult if I don't see them. So it's been working really well to do home visits if they're local.
That's impressive. Are you still working with Dr. Dwight McKee?
Yes.
Yeah, he's fabulous.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
He's not doing a lot of consults, but he's graced me with being able to give me some feedback.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah,
very good.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you, Dr. Driscoll, and I'm so blessed to have had you as a mentor to me.
Well, I think it maybe might be the other way around. So, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Diana, for joining us today and sharing the radio. And thank you to Alliance for Natural Health USA for standing in the gap for our health freedoms. Go to Alliance for Natural Health USA and become a member today.